welcome to one and all tonight. This is the July 17th meeting, 2014, of the Citizens Involvement Committee of AMANS. We have, although brief, a very interesting agenda tonight, and we welcome all of you to participate in the discussion, ask questions, provide any feedback. We want to welcome a special guest, Dr. John Peck, Professor, Department of Geosciences from the University of Akron. Welcome, Doc.
Thank you. Thank
you. We also would like to recognize some longstanding friends and members of this committee. Tim Lassen is here, Mr. Mackey, of course, Mr. Baker. And we just want to express appreciation to the members of the AMANS CIC staff who chose to make it a long day by doing their duties during the day and coming here tonight. So thanks to one and all. I'd like to officially call the meeting to order. Determination is that we do have a quorum, so we'll proceed with the formal agenda. The minutes of the May 8, 2014 meeting have been provided to you. Please take a few moments to review the minutes, and we will accept any motions in connection with the minutes as submitted.
Mr. Chair, having read them online, I see no corrections. I move to approve the minutes.
One second.
We have a motion from Mr. Mackey.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion from Mr. Lassen, or second from Mr. Lassen, sorry. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the minutes of the Thursday, May 8, 2014 meeting of the Citizens Involvement Committee as submitted, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Hearing no opposition, the motion carries. Next, we'll move on to staff reports, which there is a technical progress report from Mr. Baker.
All right. Well, as many of you might have seen, we did cancel our TAC and Policy Committee this month. There was really only one thing that we had on the agenda that was able to be held until the September meeting. So, but still felt like there was enough, obviously, with Dr. Peck coming and stuff. We didn't want to cancel the CIC, but that's why the agenda also is a little bit abbreviated. But I think it's kind of a nice thing to kind of get into. But I'd say from a technical progress perspective, the biggest thing right now is the Highway Trust Fund insolvency. The House passed a short-term fix over, what was it, yesterday or 2 days ago. I don't think the Senate's yet to respond to that. There was that bipartisan committee in the Senate that also recommended a gas tax increase to deal with the problem. 6 cents in the first year, 6 cents in the second year, and then I think indexed to inflation. I think us at AMAX think that's the way to go, but obviously it's a big political hurdle in terms of talking about new taxes. So I think, originally the insolvency is projected to happen in the 1st of August, I think, or the 2nd of August. It's not quite clear. We did hear from FHWA that they will, if it does happen, they will be going into something called cash management mode. We're not really sure what exactly that means. State of Ohio is kind of functioning as is, sort of, that we will still have funding. So from that perspective, I don't think it's great news, but I think we're hopeful that we will have, either a short-term fix or, at this point, I don't think anyone's banking on a long-term highway bill. I just think with the election cycle the way it is, it seems very unlikely. Also, I think since we last met, we had our Switching Gears Active Transportation Conference, had about 150 people, really great turnout, two really great speakers, and Jason Roberts and the former mayor of Madison, Dave Cheslowski,
Chestnut.
Oh, yeah. Chestnut. I had to say his name, and I worked so damn hard on it. Now I've completely forgotten it. He was there as well and spoke a lot about things that are going on in Madison, which has been really a great thing to see in terms of taking advantage of, you know, biking and active transportation, especially in a cold weather climate. But other than that, I don't really have a whole lot to report. You know, we do still expect to have our meeting in September and probably have a much more robust agenda in terms of action items. So.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Mm-hmm. Next, we move to item number 4 on the agenda, which is headed under old business. This is the placing of the AMATS CIC mission statement up for review and examination. We've had a couple of meetings outside the formal meeting structure, and the members of that subcommittee produced several proposed mission statements. As they vary in both content and length, they were reviewed by the AMAT staff, and Curtis will summarize the contents of those discussions for us.
Yeah, so I think three of you were on the committee, so for Tim, who wasn't sitting on this committee, a couple months ago we set up a new subcommittee to look at updating the bylaws, the CIC. Our bylaws were established in 1968. They're very old. They have never been updated other than maybe a few procedural things. And we really felt at this time the way that, you know, the transportation discussion has evolved that, you know, we felt like we could have more effective public meetings if we maybe changed from sort of the procedural type Robert's Rules, you know, page full of bylaws that we'd been kind of operating on under the last 50, 60 years. So, you know, one of the things we've talked about, we first, I think, all approached this idea as, well, we're going to meet and we're going to try to change the bylaws. And as we did that, I think we discussed all sorts of different possibilities for things like increasing attendance, you know, having more dynamic speakers or having people come in and actually talk instead of just going through the agenda item of the policy committee. And so I think the first thing we felt like we actually needed to do was sort of create a mission statement for the organization of like, well, what are we really trying to achieve with this committee? And then, you know, go from there in terms of really developing updated bylaws that we think would be in line with that. And so at the last meeting, after we'd received drafts from all the subcommittee members, AMATS put theirs put together one that was very simple and open-ended. But I think the thing that we had seen and when we analyzed them is that each mission statement was about, you know, one, providing a forum to discuss the issues, and then two was being able to provide that feedback to public officials. And so in our draft that we put together for your consideration, and I don't think we, you know, want to maybe say adopt something like this already. I think we still can kind of massage it, but basically, the AMAT Citizen Involvement Committee provides a forum for citizens to discuss civic issues and provide feedback to public officials in Greater Akron. You know, the two key things that I would say that we chose to say was civic issues instead of transportation issues. The reason for that, I think, is that I think, you know, and similar to like what Dr. Peck's going to talk about, you know, they definitely have relationships to transportation, but they're not necessarily transportation topics. And I think this, you know, from what we've talked about, having the ability to kind of go off that script, I think, is something that's really important and good for a citizens' involvement committee. And then also, you know, I think that idea of providing feedback to public officials, you know, we wanted to enhance sort of that it was the Greater Akron area. You know, that this is really about sort of a region, and this is our region. So, you know, I think we went for the less detailed route because it's very straight and to the point. But, you know, like I said, we all took stabs at it, and this was ours. So I think, you know, one, we could probably just kind of have some comments about it, but then two, probably want to develop what our next step would be in terms of the subcommittee getting back together again and, you know, how we kind of move forward from there. Tim, do you have any questions? Just because you're the only one that wasn't here. Yeah.
Well, a lot of hard work goes into trying to pack complex and very, I'd say, concerning topics into a very few set of words. It's kind of like trying to recreate the Gettysburg Address or maybe even the Constitution itself. But this is something we've got to take a run at and come up with a result. I hope you all got copies of the submissions. I think we need to take these and decide for ourselves how we want to approach this. The subcommittee had a very interesting set of discussions about mission statements themselves and what they should do, what they should be. So this time we'll open the floor to any kind of feedback, questions, whatever phraseology may have popped into your mind that maybe you don't see on these.
Are those the...
Yeah, those were all the drafts. So. Do you have a reaction, Bill?
Oh, yeah. When you say public officials, is that somehow gather in the elected officials?
Well, that was actually, that's kind of what we thought was, you know, any public official, so it could be anything from a city engineer to an elected official.
Right.
And that, we kind of use that verbiage instead of saying, like, elected officials and other, you know, government workers or whatever you would use. So I mean, that was the purpose of that language, because we feel it does. We usually say public officials in a lot of our stuff to refer to both the elected and the appointed.
Okay. Well, I sort of disagree with just the greater Akinarius, since the AMATS taps Portage County municipalities for their fair share to go into this. I don't think we should go Greater Akron, Portage and Summit counties, elite Greater Akron.
Well, Greater Akron is Portage County. I mean, in terms of the MSA, that's just a different way than we've used to say, because technically it's not Summit and Portage, it's Summit, Portage, and Chippewa Township, and so we'd have to put all of that.
Thought is that we could say in the Amex region, if we say instead of in Greater Akron, we say in the Amex region.
I would be happier with Amex region rather than just saying Greater Akron. I think we have said that somewhere in one of the other ones. The civic issues, well, yeah. Amex, Dr. Peck is the Akron Metropolitan Area Transportation Study, big long name, and it was set up to where road work, the majority of it, but ODOT gets in there and the Federal Highway gets in there with interstates and state highways. So we sort of get a look at it, citizens do. Then it goes to the Technical Advisory Committee, which are the real road engineers. They're the guys with civil engineering. And then lastly, it goes to the policy committee, which is supposedly all the mayors of the two counties and a couple of others outside here. And then they agree on how much money we can spend. And we'll give you this money this year for your project, and you're just going to have to wait. We don't have all the money. So it's horse trading up at the political level. But, you know, the citizens can have their say in there for what goes on. So So, civic issues versus transportation, or transportation and civic issues. I suppose, since it is a transportation study, civic would be, delete civic and just say issues. That's an idea.
Well, one thing we'd have to look at is, how many hats do you want your mission statement to wear?
Right, right.
I think at one of our meetings we talked about the type of job that the airport commission does. Very classy, very very focused messages about the job they do. Mm-hmm. Still in all, it makes you want to come here, makes you want to be here, in their case, the Akron Canton Airport, a desirable destination. And I guess, however we could put that in a short verbiage, I think that's where we want to go. So the question is, if we agree on that approach, how do we get there? And does our mission statement have to include a virtual rainbow of marketing ideas, promotional ideas, functional transportation, all wrapped up into this package?
It's a form. It's for the transportation study.
I think, too, there's, we talked, I think, when we last met the subcommittee about the idea of having a motto, too, which is not exactly the same, I can't remember what the Akron Canton Airport motto is. Or what
way to go.
Yeah, something like, I think at Rick's even said, like, your voice, in our transportation future, which to me seems more like a motto than a mission statement. But... But I agree. I mean, I think, we could, things like citizens or civic issues, transportation issues, or, can I help you?
I'll come for a Bible study.
I think it might be the next meeting room down. Not sure. Sorry.
How about we just delete civic and put a period after the word officials? Shorten it up.
Citizen Involvement provides a forum for citizens to discuss issues and provide feedback to public officials and public officials. You don't want to say it in the MX.
No.
See, that's,
I don't want to draw a circle around that. I just leave it open. AMATS, if they want to know what it is, they can go look at the map.
That's fair enough. What do you think, Dustin?
I go either way with having either Greater Akron, MX region, or nothing at all in the end. I think we need to spell out a little bit of what the committee is going to discuss. If we say any issues, there's no telling what we may get coming in here. I think Mike had brought up during one of the meetings for Metro, people started going on about strollers and stuff on the buses. I try to rein it in a little bit to keep it at least somewhat on the topic, in my thought. Civic issues can be sometimes a little open-ended too. Transportation obviously sums it up, but then that kind of limits what we may be able to go to.
I think one of the things that we've always worried about with transportation planning is that one of the things that we've done is, transportation is not in a vacuum anymore in terms of land use has become a big part of that in terms of what we look at from, developing the Montrose to Chapel Hill and all that stuff. So that's why I think we're always leery of putting, to discuss transportation issues, because it almost makes it sound like
roads.
Yeah, just roads. And then obviously it's more than that. So I think civic was a way to go like a grade less specific than that, but not quite as open as just issues like, come and talk about your marital issues or anything like that.
Maybe land planning. something along those lines.
I mean, it could be planning issues. You know, planning issues. Maybe, you know, a little bit more developed than just civic.
Correct. That would be my main feedback, just try to monitor them just a little bit. I always like seeing Akron on the end being from Akron.
What are your thoughts on that?
Get rid of civic or put in planning and just put a period after the word officials.
All right, so to discuss planning issues. Should we say regional planning issues? I think at least planning issues, not that I'm thinking like wedding planning or, but like at least, you know, like regional planning. Regional planning makes it sound more wonky.
You may give them a
party planning.
Party planning.
Check out our parties.
Right. I mean, at Halloween, this place could be nuts.
All
right. So
regional planning.
Shall we come up with two or three ideas here and bring it up at the next meeting? As here's what Bill said and here's what Baker said.
As in, like, using this kind of a changing, you mean like using words like Greater Akron, transportation, kind of doing this, but sticking with the same general format?
Right. I think the format works.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then maybe what we can do is we'll maybe provide three or four wordsmithing options. Some include Greater Akron, some include that, and then at the next meeting, we can try to funnel that down a little bit.
Our next regular meeting is Thursday, September 18th. So is the thought that we continue the same subcommittee members, possibly have one meeting outside the structure.
I think that would be good.
Then come back with a result.
Right, and I think that one of the things that we could do then too is at our subcommittee meeting, we could maybe dig a little deeper and if we have a mission, what does that mean for the bylaws? What does that mean for promotion and marketing and all those things? And maybe get into some of those details that I think we started talking about in the last couple of meetings.
Curtis, what's the same amounts look at or not look at seems to be very much ground based.
Mm-hmm.
Very much what?
Ground based.
Yeah. Road based.
Mm-hmm.
Do we do anything with air?
We do sat on the Canton Akron Airport puts together a long range plan, and we're usually on that committee to help them develop that. But you're right. I think that most of what we tend to be is, things like rail, roads. I mean, and really because of our area, there's not a whole lot of waterway, type discussion either, where some of the other MPOs, a lot of what they talk about is, I mean, it's still more about getting it off the boat to where it needs to go. But I would say for our area, that's pretty accurate. But I think there's always been some thought that we should be more involved in sort of some of the road or some of the air planning in terms of more facility, like how do you interact with those facilities, not planning, flights.
Well, that said, do we have, has anybody thought through to put this in the form of a motion so that we can formally have a strategy to do something and have a result by the next meeting?
Okay, I move, Mr. Chair, that we have one more mission statement planning subcommittee meeting set up by AMATS.
All right. Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Mackey and second by Mr. Baker to have further discussion, further definition and clarification of a mission statement. Somehow, the members will gather between now and the next meeting, which is September the 18th, 2014. Those members who have volunteered for that subcommittee will gather with the specific purpose of providing more clarified and focused final mission statement. Any further discussion on this motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of proceeding with an additional subcommittee meeting based on the formation of a mission statement, and presentation at the September 18th, 2014 meeting. Approved by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We won't have a formation meeting between now and September 18th, and then again present this on the formal agenda.
Anyone have any vacations or any major? The only day I have that I know for 100% certain I couldn't be able to come would be Thursday, the 31st of this month. System change over at work.
Ooh. Do we, do you want to try to do it sooner or like later? Or?
Sooner, because I'm out of town right the weekend after Labor Day. Well, I'd say like the 11th or something.
Next week, the 24th? Like next Thursday?
No. After Labor Day. We could go.
That's what I said. Would you like to do it earlier than later?
Earlier than later.
In August.
In August, rather than September.
Okay. Well, for some reason, I was looking at my calendar thinking that Labor Day was the 1st of August.
No.
Take it easy.
I know. So I'm just trying to get these months out of the way. Yeah, I was maybe like the week of the 11th or the 18th of August.
Yep. So, sounds good to me.
Okay. We'll send something out.
Do you mind writing?
11th
or 18th that week.
Thursday again?
I think so. I mean, that seems to be the day that has worked for everybody traditionally. So. Thank you, Mike.
All right. At this point, we'll close the topic of the mission statement. Meeting date to be set and distributed to the members. Thank you very much. Now we have an item under new business, which is a guest presentation by Dr. John Peck of the Department of Geosciences from the University of Akron. The topic of the presentation is the new normal in rainfall, runoff, and associated erosion in northeastern Ohio. Although this may sound pretty straightforward, it's probably a presentation concerning the many complex relationships in nature that have to do with the rainfall, what Mother Nature can do to us. It touches everybody's life in one way or another. The runoff, which is probably going to be subject close to the Amex heart, so to speak, because of the infrastructure that has to be established to take care of this when it becomes a problem, and associated erosion, which is another topic we've talked about, that is property values, economic development, and other things that I think Dr. Peck is well versed on that we haven't even thought about. So at this time, we'll turn the floor over to Dr. John Peck. Dr. Peck, it's yours.
Well, thank you for inviting me to your meeting. That was a very good summary of the kind of things we'll talk about. I hope people have a sense that it is a new normal, that for the past decade or so we've had what seems like a lot more flooding events than we used to have, and in fact, that's the case. Illustrate a study that we're doing related to that. And then this model will come in.
That's you, Dr. Peck, or we the lights on?
What do you guys?
The lights were on, we're fine.
A little lighter, Bill.
Yeah.
I'm hitting it, and it's coming full on or nothing.
Because I can see the presentation.
All right. We'll see how it goes. So again, I'm in the Department of Geosciences at the University of Akron. And before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge a lot of students that I've worked with. Part of my mission statement is to graduate students that will go get jobs in what I train them in and become an Ohio taxpayer. I work with undergrads and grads on these projects. And then support for some of our work has come from these local agencies. The kinds of things that I do are looking at urban impacts. I was showing you data that Phyllis had hooked me up with Seth and provided me with AMATS GIS coverages that I saw on the web that would be pretty useful. We go around and measure the magnetism of soils all through Akron, and we can directly relate it with high statistical significance to vehicle traffic. You burn fossil fuels out of the tailpipe, come very distinctive spheres that are highly magnetic. The more of that, the more lead in the soil. But we have a quick measure using magnetism. I do dam removals and also erosion and sediment flux, and that's what I'll talk about today. Pretty much in the Cuyahoga watershed and some other local watersheds, but certainly within the region that all of you study, Summit, Portage County, Chippewa, and a few other local areas. So what I'll talk about is Furnace Run, located here, and use it as a case study to show how this stream is out of equilibrium, and it's been that way since July 2003. Here's the Cuyahoga River watershed. It discharges here at Cleveland into Lake Erie. This is the sub-watershed Furnace Run, and the red dot is the U.S. Geologic Survey stream gauge at Old Portage down in the valley. I'll refer to that data as well. What do we mean by disequilibrium or equilibrium? Well, that concept was put forth by Lane about 50 years ago in this conceptual model. And we know that streams erode and transport and deposit sediment. But a stream is thought to be in equilibrium when the fundamental characteristics, the sinuosity, the shape, remain unchanged, even though sediment's moving through. And he represented that concept in this balance, and this is so great, I have a physical model of it. And it really tells us what's going on in streams. One side is the energy, and stream energy comes from slope, because water runs downhill due to gravity, and discharge, how much water is going down the system. That's balanced by resistance, the bed load sediment being transported and the size of that sediment. And when the resistance and the energy are in balance, fundamental characteristics, the sinuosity, what goes in, what comes out, is essentially equal, and the stream is in equilibrium. They're all connected. I perturb one of these, I'm going to throw it out of balance and affect all these other components. And we can do this naturally, humans can do it, and I'll use this balance here to illustrate when I have more stream discharge, more water in my system, what's going to happen to the whole system. So I've just had a big flood event, big discharge event, and it's thrown the balance out of equilibrium. The needle's now kicking over to the left-hand side, degradation, because I have more energy in the system than the resistance is capable of dealing with. And the stream has to respond to this new condition. So we can look at this case of increased energy in the system. Instead of a syringe, let's look at some real data. We'll look at what's going on here in your study region. This is a graph of the Old Portage discharge from the USGS, cubic feet per second. And here we have the last few decades of time. This is the mean daily discharge. And you can see there's an annual cycle. In the wintertime, it's high because the vegetation's not using the water, the ground's frozen, so it doesn't infiltrate as much. In the summer, the discharge goes low because the vegetation uses water, we have greater evaporation, we have greater infiltration into subsurface and less into the stream. There's our annual cycle. Big thing happened in July 2003. There were a tragedy in Hudson. Two fellows tried to rescue cars out of an underground basement. They were electrocuted. The scenic railway was washed out in the valley. I remember on TV all these people at Timber Top, cans of beer, they were stranded. Their bridge was washed out, and they were partying it up on the other side of the washed-out bridge. And it seems like that's the new normal, and in fact it is. So if we look at this in a number of different ways, if we look at an arbitrary number I picked, 2,800 cubic feet per second, call that a big event, In the decade before 2003, we had 6 of these days. In the decade after, we had 59 of these extreme days. If you want to just pick the 10 top floods of the Cuyahoga River, 5 of the top 10 happened in the last decade. The other 5 happened in the previous 70 years. We get more of these now. This works not only at Old Portage. We looked at this in other stream records in the Cuyahoga. We went into western Pennsylvania. This is a robust signal in a lot of the streams around here. Water has to come from somewhere. We looked at rain gauge records. We see it in rain gauge records. We see it around here, the airport rain gauges. We see it over in western PA. So there's more frequent heavy precipitation events since 2003. And this shows up very, I mean, you can see it visually, you throw all the statistics at it, it jumps out. July 2003 is the change point in this time series. So something big's going on. Put more water in the system, more energy on our balance. More runoff from our roads.
Sorry, Doctor, before you change this, it's just so interesting to me that, you know, if you would have been giving a presentation in 2002, you'd almost be saying, and right now, this is the, you know, we're trending down. Like, fewer and fewer. I mean, that's, because doesn't that kind of look like that in terms of the
definitely
trend?
Definitely a trend there.
There was, like, a trend. I mean, or is that just sort of my misinterpreting?
No. Whether that holds up statistically, I'm not
okay.
so sure.
Yeah.
What we're doing is a change point. So if we look at the mean,
uh-huh.
and the mean, it jumps out right here.
Okay.
If we look at the number of high events, that's there.
Right.
That's what he's saying. Yep. But again, if I look at the mean, maybe not.
Uh-huh.
There's a kind of wetter time, right?
Yeah.
Remember we had a nasty drought. I don't remember.
But the big one jumps out.
Yeah,
and it's robust and embedded test and all these other things.
Yeah.
What I would say, though, if I were buying culverts, and this was my data, I'd be buying this size culvert. And if I lived in this world
right.
and had no inkling of this, I'd be buying this one.
Yeah.
So the context matters.
Mm-hmm.
These records go back about 80 years,
okay.
is what we have. We have about a century of precipitation data. So we have something that's really good. We can now look at climate beyond a winter and a summer, beyond a season. We can now look at it over many, many years. If I was showing up in a place with just 2 years of data,
yeah,
that's going to be tough. But we have many, many decades, so now we can begin to get at why did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
In Ohio, Pennsylvania. And it's really complicated. We're getting more precipitation coming out of the sky, and we're connected through the atmosphere to big drivers of the Earth's climate system. And a lot of these are centered over the oceans. So we know that during cool phases in the equatorial Pacific, La Niñas, it tends to get wetter in our part of the world in the winter and in the spring. Because the steering winds that drive where low-pressure systems go are shifted. There are other modes of climate change, and these have to do with atmospheric pressure centers over the Pacific and the Atlantic Ocean that, in essence, change where the jet stream is, change where storms track. And we can get into situations where we have more storms tracking over our neck of the woods, and we get more precipitation. A lot of atmospheric scientists look at this in detail, and here's a study that's a few years old, right before that change point, but it still holds up. So here's that La Nina, cold equatorial Pacific. The big dot means that the winter stream discharge is high, it's wetter, and where we live in the Ohio River Valley area here, it's statistically significantly correlated to what goes on in the oceans. Other parts of the country, not so much. But our neck of the woods, it is. These relate to pressures in the Pacific differences, and again, they affect the steering winds that drive where the low-pressure systems come. A lot of dots. We have wetter discharge events in our wintertime. And then cold versus warm conditions in the Atlantic Ocean. We have these wetter stream flows in wintertime. All of these operate on either several years to decadal time scales. This is not the weather this week versus next week. This is not the summer we have now versus the winter coming up. This is a couple of years. This is a couple of decades. The scales that these operate in, and they steer the storm tracks over our part of the country. When some people look at those long discharge records or long precipitation records, they kind of just take an overall view of the envelope, and that's what this was, the way this was done. It wasn't looking at a specific change point, but just a general trend of these extreme precipitation events. The big solid dots are increases in the number of heavy precipitation events in the last half century. And again, our part of the world is seeing more and more of these. This is what the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change predicts. As we warm the world, we're going to hold more moisture in the atmosphere. We're going to see more extreme precip events. So this is what we want to be ready for. The other thing that goes on is, in addition to the changes in climate, is that we develop the land surface. So again, bringing it back to Furnace Run, it's that basin outlined by the red box. We're developing more and more of the watershed. So back in the 80s, there was a lower percentage of land use that was percent urban and by inference impervious compared to 2002. It had increased as more development went on. And that's going to enhance runoff versus infiltration. So both of those are going on. So the lane balance has told us we put more energy in. These are all the floods. The flood right before I went out west that hit Cuyahoga Falls really hard. I'm going to kick my balance over to degradation. Let's see what happened at Furnace Run. So I'm going to show you a whole bunch of photographs. And the air photo here is 1994, and the blue line is the year 2000 hydrology GIS coverage. This is the Cuyahoga River. It flows north to Cleveland. This is Furnace Run. Here's the Everett-covered bridge, and Furnace Run flows down here, joins the Cuyahoga River. Back in 1994, to 2000, the photo to the blue line, they're pretty much identical. A little change, but more or less identical. That means there was no difference in river erosion, change in position during the
1990s. There's a balance.
They're in balance in that decade.
That was Dusty Rose.
Mm-hmm. And this is an interesting feature to look at, the edge of the Cuyahoga near the bridge that crosses the Cuyahoga. The red dots are reference points as we go through a series of these. So here's the year 2000 photo. It matches the blue line because they're the same exact thing. So that's good. Let's go to 2005. So now we've come across that change point. We're now in the world of big flood events. Had a couple big ones in 2003, a big one 2004, a big one 2005. The river has now moved over a full channel width. Here's the blue line. That's gone right by the bridge abutment. So we've started our erosion of Furnace Run. Here's a 2010 photo. Huge erosion, right? It's this farmer's field. He used to farm right up to here. That's gone. You can see all the sinuosity coming in here. And here's 2013. Let's see if I can
figure out the light switch on this one.
This one, then we'll go back. Is it on? Huge amounts, right? So here's where it was up until July 4th, 2003. That's where you go in the river. Here it is now.
10 years. What's the horizontal distance on that?
Probably have to go back to an early one. I don't have the scale bar in here. That's a good question.
It looks like we're 100 feet or more. I'd say
a couple hundred feet.
Yeah, a couple hundred feet. A couple hundred feet.
Based on the sheds on
the
curve. Or the size of the road.
The size of the road. Yeah. So huge amounts of increase in sinuosity in that decade. sediments being flushed out. Here it is in the main Cuyahoga River. That's going to go down to Cleveland, fill in the shipping channel. Those transportation folks are going to have an issue.
Yeah, I'd like to Mike Firmwater to point out that so more water, more stuff moving downstream. The furnace run's gotten wilder in my terms.
Let's take a look at what it's doing. It's doing exactly what the balance tells us it's supposed to do. It's obeying physics, is what it's
and
doing.
And that little island in the Cuyahoga wasn't there in the previous pictures.
Yeah, I can go back one.
So,
on that. Yeah, not there. What that represents is this thing here, coarsening of the river will flush out the finer sand, leave behind the gravels. That's actually a good thing. The fish like a gravelly substrate. That's a surprise. Erosion of your land's not such a good thing. Undermining the railroad bridge. They've gone in and done some work on that. That's not such a good thing. So let's go through these things up here. Eroding, coarsening, increasing sinuosity. And we'll go back to the balance and kind of see that... physics is, in fact, doing what it should be doing. So this increasing sinuosity, and this is the point I make when I have all the civil engineers in my class and we're out on our field trips, right? We like to put things into straight ditches. And what we're doing when we do that is we're going to take the energy at this end and just deliver it to the other end. We haven't dissipated the energy. By becoming really sinuous, the river is using up the energy, right? So slope is part of the energy, is rise over run. The rise doesn't change. It comes in at Everett Bridge at some elevation. It goes out at the Cuyahoga River at an elevation. Elevation hasn't changed. So the numerator hasn't changed. What's changed is the denominator, the run. So in the old days, it was less sinuous. It had a small denominator. It had a big slope. It had energy. By having a really long run, really sinuous, the denominator becomes really big, so the slope goes down. So the stream, by eroding and becoming sinuous, is lowering its slope. It's using up energy. So I can take the balance, and on here, this arm represents slope from flat to steep. So I'm going to now adjust my arm in a little bit, and I've used up some of the energy because I'm becoming less steep. That's what it's doing there. It's eroding sediment, and that's going in the river. Uh-oh, there goes by my bridge button. And then it flushes out the fines, right? So it coarsens what's left behind. That gives me bed roughness. That helps use up energy. And the grain size is this arm. And fine is here and coarse is here, so I can move it out a little bit, make it coarser, move it out a little bit more, a little coarser, a little bit more erosion, and I get back into equilibrium in the new conditions of high energy. That's what the new conditions look like. Increased energy, all these storm events, all these high discharge events, I have to change the other components. That's what it looks like. This is the one segment that we looked at. You can hike up and down all these little valleys. It's going on in all of them. It goes on in the little Cuyahoga River. We look at that, and that's an interesting one because instead of eroding agricultural field, it erodes old urban landfill. So there's really nasty turquoise blue ooze coming out of some of those cutbacks. In those waterways.
I arrived late, Dr. Peck. Was there dredging done some reason, or it just naturally got that more straight?
Yep, there's more water.
And more water is causing it to
more energy. More energy does that. Yep, that's how it has to respond. It only has the other three components to deal with. Yep. No dredging there at all. So graphically, here it is again. So here's precipitation in Hiram, Ohio. This is robust, works in Pennsylvania too. We picked 4 centimeters of rainfall in a day as a big event. Nothing magic about that. That was a number I came up with. It sounded big to me. The bars on this bar graph represent the time between our EF photos. And there's a lot of EF photos through the Summit County, so we have pretty good coverage. And we're going back a few decades. And you can see not too many big rainfall events in a month until 2003, and then we start seeing them. Here's the old portage discharge. Instead of 2,800 cubic feet, it's converted to 80 cubic meters a second. More rain, more precip coming out of the sky, more discharge in the river, no surprise there. All begins in 2003. And then instead of just looking at it pictorially, we digitized it all. So here it is in area, and we have greater area of erosion of the farmlands when we have greater energy. Again, this isn't Furnace Run, this is the Cuyahoga River, but what's happening in the Cuyahoga River is going on in those tributaries. And it's increased precip. So increased energy, increased erosion. Urbanization enhances this. What we looked at was the National Land Cover data set, and for Furnace Run in 1996, 21% was urban. In 2001, 22%. In 2006, every 5 years, it goes up by about 1%. But there was no big change at this point. The big change, the interchange between Route 77 and 80 happened a few years before that. So the urban development just primes the surface of the land. It has to wait for the change in precipitation to bring about the change in erosion in this site. So in summary, instead of going through all the data and the numbers, I went for a really wordy slide today to get you guys involved in the discussion here. So there's a need to reduce stormwater runoff from transportation facilities, absolutely. The obvious thing is like green infrastructure, right? Do porous pavement, get increased infiltration. The more interesting things, I think, are reducing sprawl that new transportation capacity generates, like near interchanges. I'm new to Ohio. I came here in 2000 for the job at the University of Akron. I can't wait to see Seasons Road interchange in a few years' time or a decade's time, right? I think a lot of development, a lot of impervious surface happens near interchanges. That's a really creative thing to be thinking about. And then I don't have the numbers on this. This is just my gut. But somebody, this would be a good project for somebody. I have the impression that there are more stores and more houses in Summit County and Portage County. But I don't see more people in Summit County and Portage County. I think we're losing people. So there should be limited need for increased transportation capacity in lane miles. And how can we go about, limiting the need for more and more lane miles? Some places like Montrose always seem busy to me. They always seem like people trying to get in and out of shopping malls. Maybe things like retiming lights, adding turn lanes, could that help where there truly is a demand for more and more people getting in and out of these strip malls? Other places, maybe you could reduce the demand for lane miles through transit, bikeways, sort of in the neighborhoods, could be a possibility. And then the thing I'm most interested in, the reason I came here today, was to hear your ideas for reducing existing and future amounts of runoff that we absolutely have seen since 2003. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Doctor. I have. It's all up to you if you wish to do this. Would you provide, as part of our minutes to go forward to TAC and the policy committee, which are the mayors of the two counties, your 1994 slide, maybe the 2005 and the 2013 of Furnace Run, which, if you look at them, you can see the change in the sinuosity of the river and that debris island forming out there in the Cuyahoga River, to give them something to look at, or if AMAPS wants to invite you to that meeting so you can show the assembled wisdom of our county what what they're running into, what we are running into. And I made some notes. Copley had the flood. Tiger Falls had the flood. We've had bridges out. We've had roads cut. We've had economic disasters. People can't get from A to B to do their job. They have to go a long way around. Hike and bike trail washed out. Railroads were washed out. Not only the first time.
But again, this summer. Yeah.
It's if the engineer says, oh, we're going to fix this bridge based on 2000 data for the water flow, and the engineers are not aware of the fact that that's the old world. They should be in a new world. As you said, maybe we need to go from a 12-inch storm sewer pipe to a 36-inch storm sewer pipe. Well, that'll keep the cities from flooding, but it's sure going to change the Cuyahoga River when that much water goes down at one time.
Yeah, I do present it. So I don't get invited back too often. The National Park, right, their big scoping meeting. So my vision for the Cuyahoga River through the National Park in decades time is that it will look like an L.A. drainage ditch. They don't like to hear that. But what I see when I go up and down that river is the river has too much water for it to handle from the watershed. And they protect the bike path as a historical feature by placing riprap along the edge. And there's just small, or the roads, Riverview Road, just north of Bath Road. It looked like the cut bank was getting really close. They put all this riprap there. Nice, you know, put bushes in between it and all of that. But it just transferred the energy to the end of the stone, and there's a huge edge effect where it's cut way back. So they're going to have to come in and do, when they get a little bit more money, do another little piece. And before you know it, you're going to have an L.A. drainage ditch.
L.A. Basin drainage ditch, yeah.
Yeah, for your river. So that's the danger on not doing these things. These are the hard, you know, even this is easy. But, you know, these are the hard ones. This seems, you know, how do you use what you have more wisely, right, as opposed to putting down more pavement? Those seem to be the really hard ones to do, to not make it worse. But yeah, if you need a flyer for some meeting, absolutely.
Thinking of two large hard surface areas. One's Rolling Acres Mall, which is closed, and I don't know what is going to be done. I mean, that's a business economic decision.
Yep.
But I mean, if you took it all down, took all the parking lots out, and turned it into Joe's Farm, you'd be absorbing that water instead of having it run off in that area of town. And the same, I see Chapel Hill just went into receivership. I don't know where it's going to be headed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe when we have these facilities that close, it would be part of AMATS or the EPA, get rid of the parking lot, turn it into an absorbing city park, block park, whatever,
metro park,
to absorb the water in the cities rather than having it run down the streets and into the river.
They have porous concrete. We need to get the planners and the architects using a porous type concrete material.
Yeah.
I think we have some on some of the edges of the walkways up there in Akron.
Yeah, and the Metro Park at Cyberland Nature Realm has it. So it's creeping in little by little.
But the economic impact of these continuous high, if we have them, continuous high rainfalls, always taking out the hike and bike trail, always taking out rail paths, always flooding cities, our elected officials have to do something to change our, whatever, the hard space that's causing all this flooding.
Get control of the planners. I've said before that this organization needs to control our land use, and these planners building malls and strip malls and such that aren't needed, they go bankrupt anyways. That's what we got to get control of, and I don't think AMAT, we don't have a whole lot of control over land use planning.
We don't have any control.
Whereas some places like Timucog seem to have more
control over that?
I don't think they do. Well, if they're a cog, regional council governments, they might have some. They might do
a little
some
more. I know they really get big time into stream management too, yeah, up there, and that's something we don't do.
Right.
Payments.
Oregon had an issue with the Columbia River because all of the stuff was running out of Portland and other cities. It's going to affect the salmon run. Big legal issue. But they passed a law in Portland, and it could be done in our counties. Water falls on your land, it stays on your land. It doesn't run out to the storm sewer to flood the rivers.
Right. Retention ponds. I use rain barrels.
Rain barrels. Cuyahoga Falls tore out one house, continuously flooded, and they actually did a rain garden down there. It's now a low spot in the block, and water supposedly will run in there instead of flooding the area. So, yeah, there are ways.
Do you think the green infrastructure, you know, like, can it really? Do you think it can really solve the problem on its own? Like, if you were going to put a percentage to the issues of why, I mean, other than, and let's just say everything stays as it is now, no more new development. Because you're right, the numbers we've got show, you know, we've developed 20% more land over the last 30 years with population loss.
So the numbers support my gut.
They bear that out. Yeah, and that's over a 12 county. Northeast Ohio, you know, including from Youngstown to Cleveland and Akron. But I was just curious, you know, because I know, and then obviously you've got in Cleveland, which some of our areas under the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District, mm-hmm, you know, and so they're really championing a lot of green infrastructure stuff. They've got the tax as well. Yeah. We're still building these huge, you know, basically you could fit colonies in them, pipes, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and so from your perspective, I was just curious, I mean, like, you know, if everybody put a, or if everybody caught in a rain barrel their impervious surface of their roof, you know, does that have as big of an impact, would that have as big of an impact as saying, you know, just ripping out Chapel Hill and turning it into a, and obviously I know there's some watershed, you know, but like, what do you think is the thing that, is it really all the movement of small movements in terms of more people doing all these little things, or do you think that there's? Because my fear, I guess, is that eventually, you know, community, what they'll really just try to do is funnel it out of their community, and eventually, you know, it's going to end up in a more rural area where people have to live with it. You know, because it seems like if you do a 36-inch pipe, all that means is more water is running just faster down the pipe. So, yeah. just curious from your perspective of what you've seen.
Yeah, I don't want to put any like percentage on any of them. I don't even want to rank them in order. But my gut tells me that it's going to be complicated with all these things, right? Mm-hmm. From taking what you have and using it wiser to meet demand for transportation versus just adding another lane,
right,
or another road. All the different green infrastructure, whether it's individual lots keeping it on their lot, or like they're doing up in Cleveland, mm-hmm, entire streets, funneling the road runoff into ditches and trying to get that to infiltrate before it ends up in the creek is up there in Palmer. One of the tributaries.
Yeah.
I don't even know which one to rank them on. I really don't. Where I come from, in New England, they have it a little bit easier than we have it here. They're space limited. So in Rhode Island, around Boston, Rhode Island, into Connecticut, one would redevelop a strip mall. When I came out here in 2000, I was impressed with how around here, we're not space limited.
Right.
We just take some grass and we put up a new strip mall and they're still vacant from when these were put up in like 2003. And they've never been occupied. That's going to be the challenge.
I love to see the planners losing money.
it's an economic gamble. I don't know why, but they have said we are overbuilt for office space in Northeast Ohio, and somebody wants to put up another strip mall somewhere. Well, wait a minute. Why can't you fill the buildings over there?
Streetsboro's building a new structure. I saw driving home the other day. They've still got some economic development. There's a store up in Nowakis territory there. What is it? Transportation Boulevard. nearly the entire mall is vacant. The Giant Eagle and a couple other stores.
It's building on a landfill.
And it's built on a landfill, too.
Yeah.
Are the only thing happening. I want to go up there and take some photos because it's
right off the trail.
I'll have to bring them up to the department sometime. It really shows this unnecessary overbuilding.
And then maybe it'll hit people in the pocketbook. So we got our water sewer bill recently, a month ago, and it went up a lot.
Yeah.
It went from, I don't know, 170, which is what it used to be, to 240. Mm-hmm. And I think it's part of a new increase, right?
Is it Akron?
Yeah, we're in Talmadge, but it comes from Lake Rockwell to Akron back to us in Talmadge. Maybe that's when it kicks in, when it just gets too expensive.
So, I mean, we're, and I think I was telling you before the meeting, I think our mayors, all a lot of elected officials, they know these things are happening. And, but a lot of these people, they have day jobs, or, they're not experts in any of these things.
So,
even that furnace run image is pretty powerful because it's like people know something's going on. And they know just from the number of calls they're getting from residents and complaints and the flooding of the houses. But, I think sometimes that they're still in a world where we're using 1990s techniques to try to fix them. Just based on the institutional knowledge of, what you got to do is dredge that thing. Let's rip everything out of the stream then so it flows better, And I think that, that it's a hard thing too because there's not as much of that regulation, just kind of the political realm. There's no stormwater experts. Everyone's a civil engineer that knows one or two.
May I have your attention, please? The library will close in 20 minutes. Please make final selections now.
Well,
thank you.
My idea on inviting Dr. Peck here was that everybody become aware that the world has changed, obviously. And we see that based on city flooding, roads going out, railroads going out, bridges being washed out. You can't build the same, as you said, 1990s technology. You can't build that way anymore because of this. The only two options are you need to make the bridges longer and higher so the water goes under, or you find a way to slow the water down so you don't get that erosive power, and that means changing something in our cities. If our politicians have guts to do that like Portland did, well, more power to them, but I don't see that happening up here.
Well, and I do think that there's a lot of we just, someone says, we just need to fix it. There's $500,000, fix it. And so that always leads to the hard infrastructure improvement of, because it's not as fun, it's not as good to say we spend this much money handing out rain barrels to the entire community. It doesn't, I think what they like to say, because I think even Hudson's been like that. They've done a lot of hard infrastructure since that flood.
Yeah.
And that's their way to respond. It's not all the green, it's not as much the green infrastructure stuff, which that's what concerns me a little bit long-term for some of these situations.
Yeah, I think long-term, the cheaper solution is not to rebuild it every 3-5 years.
Yeah.
The scenic railway, every...
They got washed out again. Just a couple.
Happening over and over again down that rail. So it could happen to our roads again.
Yeah.
You drive a lot, Mr. Allendecker, and if your road's flooded, turn around, don't drown, you got to suddenly detour 50 miles and go somewhere. That's money.
Well, except we do have people who are out there forecasting the so-called 100 years.
Yeah, that's coming here anytime.
So if people want to determine where they want to live, build a business, or do anything, somebody's looked at it, somebody's studying it, it's there. I've looked at charts like that when I was looking at buying properties, and you look at the line, and the fella at the survey office is saying, now here's where the water could go. We're not saying it's going to go there, but here's where it could go. And that thought alone is enough to say,
And why do we allow development in those areas like Old Portage? Old Portage is going to be completely devastated this next time you do it.
Well, it's that's that's our country. That's
And they just get input, apply for FEMA funds and
you win big, lose big, whatever. I mean, that's
all. Well, we have homeowners. One lady's at the Beacon Grill. She's been washed out. She really has no flood insurance. She's just washed out. And she's wondering why she bought a house here, but nobody told her. Again, is somebody really doing this in the city saying, you shouldn't buy this house because it's in a flood zone?
Well,
I'm going to go to the realtor and say, you can't sell that house.
That's
no. The city will do that.
No, that's a loser crying that they lost. Yeah. You look at regions of the country like the Red River, the upper part of the Mississippi. People make choices. If they don't research their choices.
50 years, you've got a good place with only some small events. Eventually you're going to have the big one.
You've had Grand Forks. They've been in the news.
Oh, yeah.
Numerous times. Every year. Decade.
Similar thing happening up there, right, with that portion of the upper watershed of the Mississippi getting a lot of rainfall.
Well, it's so flat. Once the water starts to roll, it just rolls right across. It's as flat as this table. So, part of this yin and yang is based upon politics.
And private land ownership rights. It's really complicated. But I think my take-home message to all of you is, in addition to ease of commute and air pollution and all these other things, any attempt at reducing runoff is going to benefit the road infrastructure. It's going to benefit the rivers. The habitats there, the recreation potential, whether it's a scenic railway or the bike path or things like that, anybody that's downstream. So I would, from my perspective, right, I don't look at commute times and all that. I'd rank that right up there as one of your big things to consider with all the other things you have to think about, transportation.
And you have to agree that information is out there if you want to look for it. It's there. You've had some tonight. There's a lot of other information that can be sought out by somebody who wants to build. Or
let's just say you're, this is what I think our communities fall into is that, Walmart comes in. You don't have a Walmart, or Big Box A comes in, and you have a 1950s zoning code that says if you own this, 20 acres, you can do this. So what they want to do is they want to put their, they put their storefront and then create that level of parking that we all know. I think what our communities really need is someone to tell them, what do they need to include? What do they need to put into their codes? What are some of the things that they can do to help minimize the impact? Because in this day and age, you're not going to stop the Walmart, from coming, or very rarely are they successful at stopping the Walmart or stopping the big box store or whatever it is. But, what are some of the things that can be engineered, that can be asks of people or of developers to really make that stuff happen? Is it things like, having them impervious, or putting them pervious pavements, like the entire parking lot? Is probably, lawyers would argue that'd be the equivalent of taking their land. So what would those things be? Would it be, more swales or, ditches or, I think that's where they come into it, is like they know when it's happening that it's not happening the right way, but they also feel like their hands are tied, because they're still working under those old regulations that really don't help them now.
Well, they're helping somebody because they're there. They stay there. Well, all these vacant buildings with the windows knocked out that you see when you walk out this building here, they're around here. They stay shuttered. They stay vandalized. They stay vacant. So somebody's got a stake in the existing situation. They must. They must. So, and anybody who's going to do something about it figures if he's going to keep his job, he better not quite do his job. He better walk the line. And that goes right back to this.
So yeah, I mean, some buildings, right, like the Gojo get repurposed, and things in down on Main Street get repurposed. I wonder how many buildings just get abandoned and there's no money.
Just go about five blocks off of this downtown area.
It's been a level, though.
So, like, back taxes going back many years. Cleveland, I think, just entire neighborhoods, they don't have enough money to just demolish the buildings.
Youngstown is incredible. I mean,
I've never been to Youngstown.
Nothing to go see there.
I mean, it's, you know, they've lost 60% of their population over the last 30, you know, so the amount of vacancies and houses that have been ripped of all the copper and, you know, that end up being drug meth labs, and then they finally tear them down, you know. If you pull up an aerial of Youngstown, you can see all the blocks of where there used to be homes. There's grass fields, or there's two houses. Okay. That's like it's like a smile with missing teeth or something. It's very strange.
But I'll move to Boardman and some of the other suburbs.
Yeah.
That's an example of just extreme urban sprawl with no controls.
Yeah.
Massive runoff, I'm sure, for those streets.
Well, I think the hour is approaching where we're better.
We have 10 minutes of business.
Doctor, thanks so much for really engaging presentation. It's a real eye-opener in many ways, so thank you for that.
Mr. Chair, I got two items. In Cottle Falls, we performed a snapshot of the Cottle Falls area for population. Think of it like a mini-census. We had a census of 2004 from the federal government. This is a privately run snapshot of population, economics, and everything else in Cottle Falls. Maybe of use to AMAX.
May I have your attention, please? The library will close
newer
in
than
10 minutes.
Yeah.
Please check out your materials now. Thank you.
There's an article here in the paper today, Beacon Journal, about plug-ins. Who's buying electric plug-ins, like the big Tesla model, and who's buying hybrids? And there's some statistics in there that, again, could be put against our population. Those who have above a certain income, there'll be a percentage of those that buy electric. Those in another income buy hybrid. And what do these do to us? Well, it lowers gas taxes. So if you know what your population is, you can estimate how many have switched over and how much your gas taxes are going to drop inside your county based on a 2000 type test. Bring that to your attention. Thank you.
Okay. The trust fund, I have not heard anything in the news, although I haven't been keeping up with the internet. What is going to happen here next month? Is everything still on for the checks to start?
Oh, we talked about that earlier in the meeting and in the beginning of August.
Right? Yeah. It's going to go insolvent.
We made the policy meeting and we were going to send letters to Congress.
Yeah, and those were sent.
That
was sent. And
any replies?
No.
Anything
but the House, you know, the House did pass a temporary resolution. I'm not sure the length of it, but Senate has not.
So the checks start bouncing, as Mr. Fox said, next month.
Yeah, and I think it's not known for sure exactly when, just based on the outlays and, you know.
Is that going to affect any projects here in our greater area?
It could. I mean, it could,
If the check bounces, the contractor's probably going to quit work.
Right.
And layoffs of the...
So Grand Road Bridge on Route 8, we stayed closed, and Grand Road State tore up, and State Road in the fall, the State tore up.
Yeah.
We're back to taking bicycles around all the concrete slab.
Yeah.
We have a motion. I move we adjourn, Mr. Chair. Second.
We have no resolutions to pass.
No.
We got to get out of here very soon.
They close in 6 minutes.
We start at 7, right?